Welcome to In the News on Chris. I'm Jim McPherson, and today I'll be reading from the July 6th, 2024 edition of The Economist. On the cover this week, we have a picture of a walker with a presidential seal on it, and the caption, "No Way to Run a Country." Before we get to the Leader's article that inspired that cover, let's delve into politics this week. Joe Biden admitted that he had, quote, screwed up, unquote, his debate with Donald Trump. The president's disastrous performance has caused some Democrats to openly call for him to drop his reelection bid. Polls show a sizable majority of Americans think he does not have the cognitive ability to serve as president. Mr. Biden said that he would not pull out and would contest November's election. Senior Democrats, including Kamala Harris, the vice president, and state governors rallied around the 81-year-old. America's Supreme Court gave a mixed verdict on whether Donald Trump was immune from prosecution for his alleged attempt to overturn the 2020 election. In a 6-3 ruling, the court separated a president's official actions from his unofficial ones, finding that Mr. Trump's conversations with people in his administration were covered by immunity. His communications with private individuals and state officials were a gray area, the justices said, sending the issue back to the lower courts. It is now less likely that Mr. Trump will ever be tried on those election charges. After the ruling, prosecutors agreed to postpone Mr. Trump's sentencing hearing for falsifying business records. Steve Bannon began his 4-month prison sentence for refusing to answer a subpoena from a congressional committee investigating the events of January 6, 2021. Mr. Trump's former advisor held a rally shortly before his incarceration, quote, "Victory or death," unquote, he exclaimed to the crowd. More than 200 candidates from the center and the left withdrew from the second round of the French parliamentary election to avoid splitting their vote in constituencies where they have a chance of beating the hard-right National Rally, or RN, party. The United Republican Front is trying to stop the RN from gaining a majority in the election on July 7th. The RN came first with 33% of the vote in the first round. Ursula von der Leyen was endorsed by EU leaders for a second term as president of the European Commission. She now faces what is expected to be a tight confirmation vote in the European Parliament in mid-July. Kaja Kallas, the prime minister of Estonia, has also to be confirmed as the EU's top diplomat. Antonio Costa, who resigned as Portugal's prime minister last year, is the new president of the European Council, for which he does not need parliamentary approval. Turkey arrested hundreds of people after Syrians were targeted in a spate of violence triggered by reports of a Syrian man sexually abusing a child. Cars and properties belonging to Syrians were set ablaze in Kayseri in central Turkey before the unrest spread to other cities. More than 3 million Syrian refugees live in the country. Across the border in northern Syria, locals responded by attacking Turkish troops who maintain a big security presence in the area. Spain's Supreme Court ruled that Carles Puigdemont, the de facto leader of Catalonia's separatist movement, could not be granted amnesty for misuse of public funds, a blow to the socialist government, which has promised the amnesty in return for Catalan support in Parliament. The decision can be appealed against. The court held that other charges related to the holding of an illegal independence referendum in 2017 were covered by the amnesty. The new coalition government in the Netherlands, containing ministers from the hard-right Freedom Party, the PVV, was sworn in 8 months after an election. Dick Schoof, the independent, is the new prime minister. Geert Wilders, the PVV's leader, has no formal government role. Viktor Orban, Hungary's pro-Russian prime minister, made his first visit to Ukraine in 12 years and called for a ceasefire with Russia, quote, to speed up peace talks, unquote. Hungary has just taken over the 6-month rotating presidency of the EU's Council of Ministers. Mr. Orbán's meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky was cordial, though the Ukrainian president did not respond to his ceasefire comments. Turnout hit a record low in the first round of Iran's presidential election. Masoud Pezeshkian, a 69-year-old surgeon and reformist who has criticized the regime's corruption and called for engagement with the West, came first. Saeed Jalili, a hardliner who seeks confrontation with America and engagement with Russia and China, came second. They face each other in a runoff on July 5th. Mohammed Bakr Kalibaf, a stalwart of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, is out of the race. An Israeli drone strike killed a senior Hezbollah commander, known as Abu Nameh, in southern Lebanon. The Iranian-backed militia responded by firing a barrage of rockets across the border at Israel. American negotiators have been trying to stop an all-out war from breaking out between Israel and Hezbollah. Around 70,000 Israelis have been forced to leave their homes in the border area. Cyril Ramaphosa, South Africa's president, appointed a cabinet containing members of the Democratic Alliance, or DA, previously the main opposition party, averting worries that squabbles over ministerial positions might have torn apart the new coalition government. The African National Congress, Mr. Ramaphosa's party, still holds most key portfolios, including finance and foreign affairs. The DA and smaller parties control several troubled departments, including home affairs and agriculture. Mohamed Ould Ghazouani was re-elected for a second term as president of Mauritania with 56% of the vote. At least three people were killed in clashes between protesters and the security forces after his main rival disputed the results. The Electoral Commission dismissed claims that the poll had been rigged. In India, at least 121 people were killed during a stampede at a religious festival around 200 kilometers, about 125 miles, southeast of Delhi. Authorities said the event attracted 250,000 people when permission had been given for 80,000 to attend. A petition in South Korea to impeach the president, Yoon Suk-yeol, has been signed by 1 million people so far. The document accuses Mr. Yoon of corruption and failing to protect South Koreans from Japanese-treated radioactive water, among other things. The petition crashed on the National Assembly's website because of heavy demand. The deeply unpopular Mr. Yoon lost a parliamentary election in April. A powerful Category 5 storm, Hurricane Beryl, ripped through the Caribbean, destroying property and killing at least seven people. On July 4th, it was bearing down on the southeastern coast of Mexico. There is no record of a Category 5 storm ever forming in the Caribbean so early in the year. Warmer sea temperatures induced by climate change mean that ever more energy is available to create powerful hurricanes. Facing one of its biggest economic crises since the 1959 revolution, the government of Cuba announced more budget cuts, an equal pricing policy for state and private goods, and other stringent measures, declaring that the country now had a, quote, wartime economy, unquote. The prices of such items as chicken, detergent, pasta, oil, and sausage meat will be capped. We must, quote, save the revolution and save socialism, unquote, said Miguel Diaz-Canel, the president. Moving on now in the July 6, 2024 edition of The Economist to business this week. Boeing agreed to buy Spirit AeroSystems, a maker of jet fuselages that Boeing hived off from its operations in Wichita in 2005 in an $8.3 billion transaction. Reincorporating Spirit will help Boeing streamline its production process after a host of claims about shoddy workmanship. Spirit built the door panel that blew off a 737 MAX upon takeoff in January. It also produces parts for Airbus. That business will be sold to the European aerospace company as part of the deal. Tesla delivered almost 444,000 electric vehicles in the second quarter. Although that was down by nearly 5% from the same period last year, it was its second consecutive quarterly sales decline. The carmaker's share price surged as markets were expecting a bigger drop. BYD, a Chinese rival, increased its deliveries of pure battery EVs by 21% to 426,000, so Tesla keeps its crown as the world's biggest EV seller for now. General Motors had its best sales quarter in America since the end of 2020, shifting 696,000 vehicles from April to June. Sales of EVs accelerated by 40% year-on-year to 21,900, though that still represents just 3% of GM's total sales. Japan's TOPIX stock market index closed at a new high, beating the previous record set in December of 1989. The Nikkei 225, which breached its 1989 peak in February, also hit new levels this week. The Eurozone's annual inflation rate dipped slightly in June to 2.5%, though the growth of prices and services was still high at a rate of 4.1%. The European Central Bank is expected to keep interest rates on hold at its next meeting on July 18th after cutting them a month ago. An Apple executive will join OpenAI's board as an observer, according to reports. Microsoft has a similar arrangement with OpenAI, the developer of ChatGPT, a chatbot that uses generative artificial intelligence. Apple recently struck a deal with OpenAI to integrate ChatGPT into its new Apple intelligence system. Google's annual assessment of its environmental impact revealed that its carbon emissions grew by 13% last year, to 48% above its 2019 baseline, mostly because of its expanding data centers and use of artificial intelligence. Google is still aiming to be net zero by 2030, a target it admits is, quote, extremely ambitious, unquote. There's a lot of, quote, uncertainty around the future environmental impact, unquote, of AI, it said. ITER, an attempt by six governments and the European Union to build a fusion reactor in the south of France, announced another delay. It was supposed to open in 2025, already a postponement of 9 years. That has been moved a further 9 to 2034, with the first energy-producing reactions expected in 2039 and the cost rising from 20 billion euros, approximately $21.6 billion, to 25 billion euros. It looks increasingly likely that one of the many commercial fusion companies now in existence will beat it. The European Commission again flexed its new regulatory muscles under the Digital Markets Act, this time taking Meta to task over its pay-or-consent advertising model. European users of Meta's platforms can either pay for an ads-free service or consent to having their data tracked. Meta's response was that its advertising model complied with a ruling from, quote, the highest court in Europe, unquote, and that it wanted a constructive dialogue with the Commission. Nike's sale price failed to recover from the hammering it took after the sportswear company reported weak quarterly earnings and lowered its sales forecast for the year. The stock lost 20% of its value. Nike has been running behind trendy competitors such as Hoka and On in terms of sales growth. Walgreens Boots Alliance saw its share price take a similar dive after it slashed its profit forecast and announced more shop closures. The managing director of Boots, the British side of the pharmacy business, is stepping down. Walgreens had toyed with selling Boots, but none of the prospective buyers offered the right price. EU regulators approved Lufthansa's bid for a 41% stake in ITA, Italy's national carrier, which was created from the ashes of Alitalia. Rome's Fiumicino Airport will be the German airline's sixth hub when the deal closes, giving it better access to Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. The Olympics is leading travelers to postpone their visits to Paris, according to Air France KLM, which warned that traffic to and from the French capital was lagging behind other European cities and would hurt its revenue from June to August. As 15 million people are expected in the city for the Games, this may in part be because French people are postponing their holidays until late August. Quote, Paris will be unbearable, unquote, one resident told the media. And now the article that inspired the cover for the July 6, 2024 edition of The Economist. From the Leaders section, Why Biden Must Withdraw. The presidential debate was awful for Joe Biden, but the cover-up has been worse. It was agony to watch a befuddled old man struggling to recall words and facts. His inability to land an argument against a weak opponent was dispiriting. But the operation by his campaign to deny what tens of millions of Americans saw with their own eyes is more toxic than either, because its dishonesty provokes contempt. The effect has been to put the White House within Donald Trump's grasp. Fresh polls have found that voters in the states Mr. Biden must win have moved against him. His lead may be in danger even in once safe states such as Virginia, Minnesota, and New Mexico. Mr. Biden deserves to be remembered for his accomplishments and his decency rather than his decline. So it is right that the first senior Democrats have begun to call openly for him to step aside. However, their public expressions are nothing compared with the building wave of private dismay. More of them urgently need to face up to the fact that if they do not speak out now, Mr. Trump will win. In order to bring about the political renewal that America now so clearly needs, they must call for change. It is not too late. Democrats argue rightly that Mr. Trump is unfit to be president. But the debate and its aftermath have proved Mr. Biden unfit too. First, because of his mental decline. Mr. Biden can still appear dynamic during short scripted appearances, but you cannot run a superpower by autocue. And you cannot put an international crisis on hold because the president is having a bad night. Should someone who cannot finish a sentence about Medicare be trusted with the nuclear codes? Mr. Biden is blameless for his failing powers, but not for a second disqualification, which is his insistence, abetted by his family, senior staff, and Democratic elites, that he is still up to the world's toughest job. Mr. Biden's claim that his election is between right and wrong is ruined by the fact that the existence of his campaign now depends on a lie. Democrats sneer at the Republican Party for its craven behavior toward Mr. Trump. Again, they are right. Too many Republicans have parroted his falsehoods and lacked the moral courage to speak out against his abuses. Convinced they could outlast him or that someone else would pay the price for ejecting him, senators and congressmen have put their ambition before their country. The Democratic Party should look in the mirror, starting with Mr. Biden himself. He avers that he failed in the debate because he was tired from jetting around the world, as if his debility were evidence of his vitality. His supporters argue that those awful 90 minutes should not overshadow the past 3.5 years. But what matters is whether they foreshadow the next four. Senior Democrats repeating these desperate talking points or waiting in silence for someone else to speak up first may think they are being loyal. Is that loyal to their country or their careers? Democrats might say that their tactics are just politics. Their ugly means are justified by the honorable ends of saving American democracy from the predations of Mr. Trump. That defense does America no favors. The tactic of covering up your own flaws by demonizing your opponent has long marred American politics, but using the threat of Mr. Trump as a dictator to offset Mr. Biden's evident infirmary is a form of blackmail. As the head of state, America's president embodies the virtues of the republic. The more he is seen as a stubborn old man who leaves the real work to his courtiers, the more he will undermine Americans' faith in their system of government. Representing America abroad, Mr. Biden will project decrepitude to the delight of China and Russia and the dismay of American allies. There is another option. Mr. Biden should withdraw from the campaign. That way, the election might refresh the body politic. The virtue of democracy is that voters can choose their rulers, but Mr. Biden and Mr. Trump offer a choice between the incapable and the unspeakable. Americans deserve better. As our new podcast, Boom, explains, presidential politics is stuck in a rut. Barring Barack Obama, every president since Bill Clinton in 1992 was born in the 1940s. Mr. Biden, 1942, first campaigned for the presidency 37 years ago, albeit in a fumbling way. At that time, Mr. Trump, 1946, thought about running too. Their generation came of age during the Vietnam War. It carries around the baggage of campus protests, the greed is good era on Wall Street, and old fights over race and feminism. Those fights are very different today, and not only because they are more often waged on TikTok. The stagnation is a failure of the party system. Parties are supposed to be vehicles that bring together factions and interests to bid for power. They have been carjacked. First, the Clintons and Bushes seized the wheel. When voters were sick of them, Mr. Obama, and then Mr. Trump, staged grassroots rebellions. In today's Democratic Party, the driving seat is being hogged by Mr. Biden and his people. Only if Democrats take back control and persuade him to move aside can renewal begin. The Economist first said in 2022 that Mr. Biden should not seek re-election because he was too old. Immediately after the debate, we made our case more strongly. A fresh candidate would have just over 10 weeks after the convention to make their pitch. Such a candidate might lose, obviously, though even then the catharsis of Mr. Biden's self-sacrifice would help restore American politics. But we believe that they would have a good chance of winning, a better one than Mr. Biden, even if the candidate was Kamala Harris, his relatively unpopular vice president. They would be fit to govern, and they would, with the exception of Ms. Harris, deprive Mr. Trump of his strongest arguments against Mr. Biden, the responsibility for inflation, immigration, and the supposed witch hunt that led to his prosecution. America's renewal needs to start now. There could be no better way than by choosing a new candidate to defeat Mr. Trump. That was the lead story in the Leaders section in the July 6, 2024 edition of The Economist. Now on to the lead story in the United States section. Democratic bigwigs are starting to call for Joe Biden to step aside. Some fires are hard to snuff out. The one that started after President Joe Biden's disastrous debate performance on June 27th, through which he stammered only semi-lucidly, is developing into a blaze. For a few days, it was only the media, albeit including the columnists and commentators closest to the president, who were calling for him to abandon his bid for re-election. But on July 2nd, the president's support within the Democratic Party started to crack. Lloyd Doggett, a representative from Texas, became the first sitting Democratic congressman to call for him to stand aside. The following day, another, Raul Grijalva, joined him. Reed Hastings, a big donor, also said Mr. Biden should make way for another candidate. Betting markets, which had put the odds of the president leaving the race at 20% on the morning of the debate, raised them above 60% on July 3rd. Other grandees have been hinting at similar views, or at least refusing to excuse Mr. Biden's doddering inarticulacy. Sheldon Whitehouse, a senator from Rhode Island, told a local TV station, quote, "Like a lot of people, I was pretty horrified by the debate," unquote. Jim Clyburn, a representative from South Carolina and close ally of Mr. Biden, says he still supported the president, but would back Kamala Harris, the vice president, to replace him were he to drop out of the race. Perhaps most important, Nancy Pelosi, a former Speaker of the House who had initially poo-pooed concerns about Mr. Biden's fitness, seemed to be opening the doors to doubters by telling an interviewer, quote, "I think it's a legitimate question to say, is this an episode or is this a condition?" unquote. These public utterances are the palest shadows of the misgivings Democrats express in private. Leaks are proliferating of meetings in which Democratic congressmen and governors cast doubt on Mr. Biden's ability to continue his campaign. The muttering comes despite the energetic efforts of Mr. Biden's surrogates to quell the anxieties of donors reluctant to throw good money after bad, and of down-ballot candidates frightened that a faltering president might wreck their chances as well. The apologists have come up with a remarkable number of explanations for Mr. Biden's feeble display. He had a cold. He had prepared too much. He had jet lag. He had the stronger arguments, even if he struggled to be understood. A senior moment, even 90 senior minutes, is far from disqualifying, they insist. A rally on June 28th, at which Mr. Biden successfully delivered a speech aided by a teleprompter, was greeted by his supporters with the jubilation of a kidnapped victim's family receiving a proof-of-life video. Jen O'Malley Dillon, Mr. Biden's campaign chair, called donors to instruct them to disbelieve their lying eyes and ears. Quote, "He's probably in better health than most of us," unquote, she said, according to CNN. As unconvincing as this bluster is, Democrats have been paralyzed by a collective action problem. Individual members face severe consequences for declaring publicly that their emperor has no clothes. They may be ostracized by their party, lose funding, or face a primary challenge in the future. What is more, because the president has already captured all the delegates needed to secure his party's nomination, he will become the Democrats' official candidate at the party's convention in Chicago in August, unless he personally decides to step aside. The president is famously stubborn. If he refuses to change course, the only effect of attacking him will be to provide aid and comfort to his enemy, Donald Trump. And there are always the uncertain political consequences to consider. In a parliamentary system, MPs can depose a prime minister without consulting voters. But Democrats know that a sitting president has been induced to renounce a bid for re-election only twice since the Second World War. Harry Truman in 1952 and Lyndon Johnson in 1968. Both were Democrats, and both their replacements went on to lose. Recent surveys of public opinion may be clarifying the likely consequences somewhat for Democrats. A poll released on Sunday by CBS News and YouGov found that only 27% of voters think that Mr. Biden has the cognitive health needed to be president. 45% of registered Democratic voters said the president should step aside. This week's iteration of The Economist's regular poll, also conducted by YouGov, found a shift of 2 percentage points away from Mr. Biden compared with the week before. Political operatives and donors are anxiously trading and selectively leaking private polling, which is usually of higher quality than the publicly available stuff. Mr. Biden was already trailing Mr. Trump in the presidential race. The debate, arranged by his campaign at a far earlier date than is usual, was supposed to be the president's chance to reset the race in his favor. Instead, his implosion has left all Democrats wondering what could possibly refloat an apparently foundering campaign. Mr. Biden's aides are hastily scheduling meetings, calls, and public appearances in the hope of reassuring doubting Democrats. The president met Democratic governors on July 3rd. He is supposed to speak to skittish Democrats in Congress later this week. He has scheduled an unscripted television interview to air on July 5th and has booked himself a rehabilitation tour of swing states over the weekend. His staff also announced that he will hold a news conference at the NATO summit in Washington next week. However, Mr. Biden could claim the mantle of George Washington or Cincinnatus, gracefully surrendering authority for the greater good before the American people sees it from him. And that's all for readings from the July 6th, 2024 edition of The Economist. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.